D-Mace Finnegan and Donick, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. And we are presented by Bet365. Whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, and David Janes here with you on a sweltering Monday in our fair city.
I love it.
It was a rough weekend for our rooting interests in college baseball. Willie Donick up in Ohio, where unfortunately Mahoney Donick and the Denison Big Red eliminated from the D3 College World Series. And of course, and we're going to spend a lot of time talking about Vanderbilt making the wrong kind of history this weekend at Hawkins Field, eliminated as the number one overall seed in the NCAA baseball tournament after losing to Wright State on Sunday. So with that uplifting introduction, how is everybody doing today?
Well, I mean, that was, you know, that whole series was, man, it was up and down for Vandy, more down than anything. But besides that, the weekend was good. Got an opportunity to see a good friend of mine, my old college roommate, my brother. You know, so I got a chance to spend time with him. He's here for PAC, which is Pro Athletes Community. They're doing a lot of great things for athletes that are transitioning into the real world. So I was able to be a part of that this weekend, and I got another function I got to go to tonight. But that's been my weekend, man. You know, getting excited for a minute at Vandy when they kind of made it seem like it was going to be the game. It should have been 5-5. I hate that rule, but so be it. They end up losing 5-4. They mounted a comeback.
Willie, how are you doing? A double whammy for the Donicks this weekend.
You know, it was it's all about perspective, guys. I'm sitting here at Nationwide Arena in the press box. I want to just give a shout-out to Marty Mulford and the Columbus Blue Jackets for accommodating me today because, you know, when you're in a double elimination tournament, your whole life is in flux. You don't know when your team is going to be out. You can't assume that they're going to keep winning. You hope that they don't lose, but all of a sudden, Denison's magical run to the College World Series on the Division III level was done in a day. They won their first game, but they were swept yesterday. It ended up after midnight Eastern time. So I had to find a place to do the show today on my way home because I got to take my college freshman, who's now no longer a freshman. He'll be a sophomore. He's a rising sophomore. Got to get him back to Nashville. So there was a lot in flux. So Denison's tournament was in the World Series, mirrored Vanderbilt's run in the regionals. Win the first game, feel good about where you're going, team's looking good. And then just like that, as we talked about last week, baseball can strike. And you just never know how it's going to go. There is a randomness. It's hard to just, even for the better team, to overpower the opposition if the other team comes up big. But I know there's a ton of disappointment on West End today, just like there will be in the town of Granville, right down the street here from Columbus, Ohio.
You've probably heard this by now, but with Vanderbilt being eliminated in its own regional, the Commodores are the first number one national seed to fail to reach its regional final since the tournament went to its current format in 1999. It started off, I guess you could say promising, but really Vanderbilt averted disaster on Friday. The Commodores defeated Wright State 4-3. Riley Nelson hit a home run that was initially ruled a foul ball. It was overturned. Wright State reviewed it. The review was upheld, and Vanderbilt survives and advances on Friday. But the Commodores lose 3-2 to Louisville on Saturday and 5-4 to Wright State on Sunday. And as Derek mentioned, Vanderbilt down 5-1 in the top of the ninth. They cut the lead to 5-4 on a Rustin Rigdon ground rule double. And because of that, Mike Mancini had to stay at third. If that ball stays in the park, Mancini scores. It's a tie game in the ninth inning. But because it hopped over the fence, Mancini has to stay on third. And then R.J. Austin flied out to end the game as Vanderbilt makes unfortunate history in the NCAA baseball tournament. Let's hear Tim Corbin, of course, Vanderbilt's head coach. This was his analysis of his team's loss after the game.
No, the game usually works its way out. You could see that we kind of ran out of time. You know, we were getting to that point where we were on the edge. We got in that dugout, and the players were communicating, we're going to roll this ninth. We're going to roll the ninth. And you could feel the momentum shift. But, you know, we just ran out of time. But, no, you can't. I mean, it's going to happen organically. The kids are trying to get themselves going. They're trying to stay very positive, which they were. But I think when you've got a group of guys that – and this isn't the case with every team – but when you have kids that really, really care about each other, then that too can play into trying to finish something because everyone wants it for one another. And when you want it for one another and it doesn't work out, sometimes you're trying harder. And I could feel that. And there's no magic words, magic dust for that moment, but you could sense that these kids really, really wanted this for each other. And sometimes when that happens, it's squeezing the bird too hard.
So that was Tim Corbin after the game. And Willie, we spent so much time in the latter half of Vanderbilt's season talking about the offensive surge that the Commodores had, but a complete power outage in these three games. They hit 132 in the regional, 2-for-17 with runners in scoring position, 0-for-9 against Louisville, 2-for-8 against Wright State on Sunday in the second of the two matchups against Wright State. So when you analyze what went wrong for Vanderbilt, how did a team that was hitting the ball so well on its way to winning the SEC tournament, how did that completely unravel in 3 days on West End?
I think in a simple word, it's baseball. But to break it down piece by piece, number one, you have to look. I think too often we don't credit the other teams. That I think Wright State and Louisville deserve credit for stepping up and playing their best, giving themselves a chance by getting some great individual pitching performances. And that said, you know, I think you heard it in Tim Corbin's voice. He felt like his team started trying a little too hard. It wasn't coming easy. And I think when you're the favorite, and I think we said all year long, this was not a team that was loaded with future first-round picks. History could prove me wrong, but I think this was a team that probably overachieved and made a pretty remarkable run to get the number one seed. And they kind of reverted back a little bit more to what you can be. It's just hard to stay hot for six straight weeks, especially if you don't have this incredible talent. And so I don't want to be making excuses for them at all, because they were a team that should win that regional. They should have won it, and they didn't. And it's crushing for sure. But I've seen it happen before, right? You come back to earth. You've had these miraculous wins where you're hitting walk-off homers. You're making these huge comebacks. Everybody's rolling. You roll through Hoover, the best league in the world in college baseball. They rolled through there and swept for an SEC championship. I've seen it happen. You know, when the President's Trophy team loses in the hockey playoffs in the first round, it happens on occasion. There's a randomness. You lose it. You start trying too hard, and the underdog wins. So it was tough to watch, but it is something that we see in sports sometimes.
Yeah, it does happen. I mean, listen, I think ultimately. The team that showed up in the college playoffs, the College World Series playoffs, I think was probably closer to the team that we saw throughout the season. I think they went on a hot streak entering into the SEC championship, SEC playoffs, and everybody considers the SEC the top conference in baseball. And it seemed like they dominated on their way to winning the SEC championship. So their bats got hot at the wrong time, but then they cooled off at the wrong time. They became more of who they are, And I'm not sure that this team was truly equipped. I know what they did the night previous, you know, coming back and hitting home run. I get that. But I don't think this team, you know, realistically, if you just look at it, they probably were not a team that could, you know, come back from a deficit that they were in, because their bats, they just wasn't batting well. No one was hitting the ball. They had three hits the whole game. They left runners in scoring position. You just don't do that by accident. I think they came back down to more so of who they are. I think they're still better than what they showed the other night, but I think they're closer to that than what we saw when they ran on it, when they ran through the SEC championship.
As Joe Rexroad notes in his column on The Athletic, Vanderbilt led for just one of the 27 innings it played. And again, the Commodores hit 132 in the regional, 2-for-17 with runners in scoring position. We did talk about the quote-unquote curse of the number one overall seed in the College World Series tournament. So, again, only two number one overall seeds have won the College World Series, Miami in 1999 and Tennessee in 2024. By the way, Willie, the SEC, 13 teams into the tournament field, 7 have already been eliminated, including 3 hosts: Vanderbilt, Texas, Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi State, Florida, and Kentucky. And Tennessee could join that group. A do-or-die game today in Knoxville, Tennessee versus Wake Forest. But the SEC,
I believe LSU is well. Am I right about that? LSU's
yes,
got to win.
LSU plays okay,
so,
the Rock.
Okay, so now it's 8. 8 teams have been eliminated.
LSU plays tonight against
Little
Rock.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, yeah. So it could be 9. There you go.
It could be 9.
It could
be as many as 9, which would be a shock. It really would. Vanderbilt is now 0-2 as the number one overall seed. It's so crazy, all the success they've had going back all these years with Tim Corbin, and the teams that have earned the highest seed have not done well. But, you know, I have experienced, and I don't know if, D-Mace, you've ever been on a team like that where – because there's not a series in football, but I think about some playoff games that you played when everybody, you've had such great mojo for a long time, and then suddenly you don't have it. It's like a superhero that loses the powers.
And you're trying to find
it. And you're looking around, you're like, how do I get, wait, I have these magic, but where are they? And everybody's looking around going, what's wrong? What's wrong? There's a weight that comes in, especially for something as delicate as hitting. And it's hard to explain. Again, I'm not making excuses for them at all. They didn't get it done. But at the same time, this is sports, right? It does happen. We can cite other things. The Titans in that playoff game against the Bengals, they played a terrible game at the worst possible time. That would be an example. The President's Trophy winning Predators in 2018, Game 7, Their future Hall of Fame goalie, the guy that's got the statue, gives up 2 goals early in the game. It's just really weird how in sports sometimes bad things happen at the worst possible time and suddenly derail a ride that has been going super, super well and exciting. You have all these great moments, and suddenly, you know, it's like you come up empty so fast.
Is this what do you think this was a because if you look at it, listen, they got the number one overall seed, meaning Vandy, because of what they did in the best conference in baseball, college baseball. But do you think that just maybe the opponent was the wrong opponent for Vandy? Because even the guy at Wright State threw on the mound the other day, he was giving up 8 runs and they still couldn't amount anything. Against a guy that you should have dominated him.
Yes, on paper that pitching staff should not have 2 games, where they shut down Vanderbilt's offense. It should not happen. You know, Louisville is a program that's been really good for a long time, and so them stepping up and having the talent, the recruiting base that they're working off of, that I can see. But it does make me think it just became kind of mental. And I wasn't at the games, but you could sense it when you were watching it, right? It just shouldn't it shouldn't happen that way, but it's how big upsets happen. You start looking around going, why isn't this happening easy? Let's try harder. And it's not like they don't care, but sometimes, like you heard Tim Corbin, when you're trying too hard, you get intense, and it just doesn't happen for you. It becomes you do worse than you should.
615-737-1025. Vanderbilt eliminated from the NCAA baseball tournament, becoming the first number one national seed to fail to reach its regional final since the tournament went to its current format in 1999. We'll take your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com at 615-737-1025. Willie mentioned the mental side of things. Tim Corbin had a quote after the game that I found to be interesting that I would like to discuss, but also the Commodores' failure in the Nashville Regional will lead to a certain conversation about Tim Corbin, I'm sure, and we will touch on that next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, the game.
You know, for us, it was tough. It was hard. Offense, it was just hard. Hard to come by. It felt tough. It felt heavy. The guys were trying. I feel like I didn't equip them properly in some way. You know, having done this a lot of times, I just feel like I didn't equip them for this moment. But they were trying, and it could feel like we were going to pull it out. You know, Mike had another big hit. He's been so clutch to us throughout the year, but certainly down the stretch. He's a good leader. He's tough. And the kids play tough. It's unfortunate to get to this point. It really, really stings for the kids, and I hate it for them. I hate it for them. I do. You work so hard to get yourself in a position where you can win, and when it ends, it's always the same. It's just a terrible feeling. It's an empty gut, and I feel bad for the kids.
That was Tim Corbin. Yesterday, after Vanderbilt was eliminated from its own regional, losing 5-4 to Wright State, I do want to get to that quote because I did find it to be incredibly fascinating. But first, let's go to Eric on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Eric, thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys. I've got no dog in this hunt when it comes to, like, the college baseball scene or anything like it. And I've heard I don't think it's a lot of charity. I mean, I don't know because I haven't really heard. Don't pay much attention to social media. I've heard some rumblings of the thing. Maybe it's time for Tim Corbin to go, which I don't buy. You know, I think he should be there as long as he wants to be there. But one of the things I heard on another station, somebody made this point, and I don't know if you guys would agree with me or not, is that they think that, of course, it's the whole NIL and transport portal where Vanderbilt, of course, in football, with the whole Diego Pavia thing, benefited from that. And they were able to get some transfers, recruits in and stuff. And the like, but they think that's kind of biting them in the butt, like kind of comparing to like with Alabama football and all that stuff. I don't know if you guys think that has anything to do with it or not, but of course it's going to be harder for Vanderbilt to get the type of players that they need with the NIL transfer portal. I think certainly they've done a good job recruiting, and I've heard that they've got a top five class and everything, and I'm not going to say I would never count them out with Tim Corbin and the type of program he's built up, but I just wanted to get your thoughts on that. Do you think that has anything to do with that, or do you think that could be overblown, or just what your general thoughts are on that? Guys, as always, a good talk to you guys. Y'all take care, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for the call, Eric. Willie, why don't you answer that question?
I think we did a pretty good job last week, in the last couple of weeks, really, as we started focusing more on their run that got them into this position where they could host as the number one overall seed. The adjustments and the adaptations that Tim Corbin has made in the new world of college athletics with the NIL and transfers. We talked to Tim Corbin directly about the fact that he still believes and values high school recruits developed into young men and great baseball players. Eric mentioned the top five recruiting class. You know, he's gonna get the top recruits. He's continuing to get the top recruits out of high school, but now it's about not only that, but you got to blend it with mm-hmm. some the right transfers, etc. right? And but I think he's doing that. I feel very good about where it's going. I don't feel I'm very encouraged about where it's going to go from here. I think the adjustments have been made to the formula, and it's been an incredibly successful formula. This quote-unquote down cycle, if you want to call it that, for Vanderbilt baseball includes two SEC tournament championships in the last 3 years, two hosting of the regionals in the last 3 years. It just hasn't happened in the postseason. The last three postseasons, they haven't come through for whatever reason. And other than that, I think the program is fine. Any issues with Tim Corbin, I think, are just way, way overblown and people grasping at straws. It's just frustrating when you see a team struggle to hit like that, right? They had, like yesterday, they had base runners. They only had one hit through eight innings, but they had guys on base. And even the key game was really the Louisville game. If they find a way to win that game, they're going to win that regional. But they lost the critical game where they were down 3-2 with second and third, I think nobody out in the sixth or the seventh inning, and they don't score. One big hit there, and they're probably okay. But that's the razor's edge we're talking about. But big picture, I'm very encouraged of where it's going.
One texter says, sixth inning in the Louisville game was when the weekend was lost. Bunt Vasteen, they get the tying run home, and it may be another story. Him and RJ Ofer with 7 Ks, not good. But piggybacking off of what you were talking about, Willie, you're right about the fact that the Commodores have won the SEC tournament two of the past 3 years. But since Vanderbilt came within one win of the national title in 2021, the Commodores have failed to reach the second weekend of the tournament 4 years in a row. I can't imagine that's ever happened or has rarely happened under Tim Corbin's watch. And I do think that because of that, there are going to be people who don't watch Vanderbilt baseball every day and wonder what people were wondering last year. Has Tim Corbin lost his fastball, so to speak? But I do want to touch on that comment he made that we came back on from the break, Derek. Tim Corbin saying that he feels like he didn't equip his team properly for that moment. And I found that to be interesting, just because Tim Corbin has been in this position every year for the past two decades. So, as you said to me before we went on the air, there's only so much a coach can do, right? Mm-hmm. Tim Corbin can't pinch hit for his players who can't hit in these games. But I found it fascinating to hear a veteran coach say that he felt like he didn't equip his team properly for this moment.
See, that's the difference between, to me, not only great coaches, but coaches that understands the moment. Last week we were talking about, who was it, Toronto Maple Leafs coach?
We were talking about the Dallas Stars coach.
Yes. Pete DeBoer. And his remarks he made after, his loss.
Right, after the Stars were eliminated by the Oilers.
Absolutely. So you saw his remarks. And then a few weeks later, or a week later, you see a contrast, the opposite of what was done in Dallas. You saw the opposite from a head coach, a veteran guy, that is very disappointed in his team, but he understands the moment. You know, it doesn't make it any better if you go after individuals or if you go after a certain position. What you do is, and what Corbin did, and I'm trying to figure out, and I need, you know, I'm gonna ask you, Willie. He's trying to take on the brunt of the loss. And when I listen to him, I'm like, I understand what you're saying, coach. You are A1. You take full responsibility. Yeah, your players need to do what they need to do, but you felt that you just didn't equip them well enough. But when I look at it, how much more can he equip them? He's not. They had men on base in scoring position. It's not, you know, Corbin can't go out there. He can give them strategy, what pitches to look for, but he can't go out there and actually make them swing the bat. I understand where Corbin came from, but Willie, you've been in that world. Like, what is he actually referring to? Is it something technical?
I think you hit on it 100%. I think he's a guy that just would want to do anything for his players, but it's a little bit of a helpless feeling. But he's putting it on himself. He's making himself accountable. And because I just think he feels awful you hate it when you build every day. You know, people have made jokes about Brian Callahan and the team building stuff that he's doing. Oh, it's, you know, romper room or whatever stuff that people want to pick at. But really, that's what a coach's job is. You build an environment. You build a culture. You build for months towards the big moments so that your team can come through in those moments. And so as a coach, when you've had all this table setting and you're hopefully going to reap the rewards and you fail, you feel like you failed as the coach. That's just what a good coach does, right? But it's not magic. It's like you said, D-Mace, you can't go up to the plate and magically make it happen. You can put everybody in the right position, but ultimately they got to get it done. And the other team is trying really hard too. The other team has been building for 6 months. Wright State's been sitting there going, "Hey, this is our shot. Mm-hmm. We're going to pull the biggest upset in the country." You know that's the essence of sports, and it stinks when your team doesn't do it. And that's what you're hearing in Tim Corbin's voice. He hates to lose. I mean, hates more than I think anybody that I know.
He is the definition of someone who hates to lose more than they like to win.
Yeah,
I've heard that. That thing one or two times.
That's the when they lose, he puts it on himself. When they win, I think he is great about giving the credit to his players. I think that's what a great coach, and he's not the only guy, but he's an example of what I think the truly great coaches feel.
So, Willie, let's talk about these past four tournaments. And of course, we want to stress that every team is different. I heard Robbie Stanley mention this morning, and I agree. During the Eastern Conference Final of the Stanley Cup playoffs, the Carolina Hurricanes were down 3-0 in that series to the Panthers, and they were on the verge of being swept out of the Eastern Conference Final for the fourth time in a row. They were swept in like 2009 and like 2000, I don't remember what year, 2019. And Robbie was like, and I agree with him, it's weird to ask players who are on this team about a sweep that happened in 2009. None of them were there.
Right.
None of them were there for that. So I understand that every team that Vanderbilt has had over the past 4 years is different in some way or another. But at the end of the day, Vanderbilt has failed to reach the second weekend of the tournament 4 years in a row. Willie, as the person that I know who watches this program closer than anybody else, have you noticed any common themes or threads about why Vanderbilt has been unable to get out of the regional over these past 4 years?
I think part of it is what we've been talking about. It's hard to explain. Just like all those great, for those who are from this area and watched the Braves for all those years, in the 90s, in the 2000s, for over a decade, they were in there every year, but only won the whole thing one time. There were so many seasons where you're sitting there going, how, with Greg Maddux, Tom Glavin, and John Smoltz, and Chipper Jones, how did they not win it more than that? Because they were in it every year. And I think sometimes when you're in it every year, you take for granted how hard it is to be there every year. But I will say this. I think, and we documented this, it's not me just saying this now, right? I've been saying this the last couple of years. When the NIL shift happened, the transfer NIL shift happened suddenly, Vanderbilt as a school was slow to react. And I think Tim Corbin really didn't dive in like other teams. And I think that it did take its toll a little bit on the overall collective talent level. But I think it's rebounding. I think he's got his formula the way he wants to go at it. And I think if he can hold on to the top-end recruits and not lose them to NIL elsewhere, and I think that's where Vanderbilt has come now. I think they've got enough resources to where they can keep the guys they want to keep. They can pay them enough in the NIL. You know, that I think they will rebound and get that high-end team. Because if you look at the teams that have won it for him, right, they've had the top-end guys, Austin Martin, J.J. Bladé, Kumar Rocker, Jack Leiter. That's the recent group. Then you can go back to David Price and all these other guys, right? Guys who are high first-round picks who are playing in the big leagues today, right? I think they're moving back in the direction where they're going to have a couple of those dudes, right, that can pick everybody up and be the difference.
615-737-1025. We will take your thoughts on Vanderbilt's unprecedented loss in the NCAA baseball tournament, the first number one national seed to fail to reach its regional final since the tournament went to its current format in 1999. And Tennessee fans could get the last laugh depending on what happens today in Knoxville. Tennessee takes on Wake Forest in an elimination game in the Knoxville regional. That game is at 5 o'clock. We'll see if the Volunteers can advance to the Super Regional. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, there is a position on the Tennessee Titans that I think a lot of fans would like for them to upgrade. And there was a report over the weekend about an intriguing name who could, I stress, could be available. We'll discuss that next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, The Game.
Here we go with Kyle Pitts. What do you know about him?
So a little trade buzz on that right now. I checked with a source who said that if the Falcons can get a really good offer for Kyle Pitts, that he very well could be moved. So it's not a situation where they're aggressively shopping him, but they certainly appear open. That's the feeling around the league, that they'd be open to moving him at the right offer. And so from Pitts' perspective, he does love Atlanta. He's not requesting a trade or anything, but my sense is he would at least be open to a new offense somewhere else, because right now he's probably the third or fourth option in Atlanta. Somewhere else he could be more prominently featured for that.
That was Jeremy Fowler on ESPN over the weekend talking about Atlanta Falcons tight end Kyle Pitts. Jordan Schultz reported over the weekend as well that multiple teams have reached out to the Atlanta Falcons about the availability of Pitts. From Schultz, quote, "Nothing is imminent and Atlanta would prefer to keep him, but I'm told it would take at least a day two pick to even spark serious talks." And Titans fans, I think they're over Chigakonkwo as the team's starting tight end, to say the least.
Pretty much so.
So I know one person that seems to be over him.
Yes, but I don't think he's alone. So I was thinking about Kyle Pitts, number four overall pick 4 years ago in 2021. Had an outstanding rookie season, 68 catches, 1,026 yards as a rookie in 2021. He was the first rookie tight end to be named to the Pro Bowl in nearly 20 years since Jeremy Shockey in 2002. But since then, though, he has struggled with injuries and inconsistency. In the 3 years since, he has 1,625 total receiving yards, which averages out to 628 yards per 17 games. And he's been phased out of the Falcons' offense. In 2022, Kyle Pitts had a target share of 30.7%. Last season, that plummeted to 17% behind Drake London, Darnell Mooney, and Bijan Robinson. So, Derek, as you explained to me, the coaching change had a lot to do that. Because who was the Falcons' coach before Raheem Morris?
It was Arthur Smith.
And we know Arthur Smith likes him some tight ends.
Exactly.
Yes, he does.
So Raheem Morris comes in. He brings in an offensive coordinator from the LA Rams, who, Derek, you told me, do not feature the tight end prominently. So it had me wondering, if the Titans are looking for an upgraded tight end, if they are looking for a young tight end who can grow with the team, Kyle Pitts is 24. He'll turn 25 in early October. I'm wondering, Derek, if the Titans should take a run at Kyle Pitts. What do you think about that?
I think they should. Now, what are, you said a second day pick, second round pick.
As reported by Jordan Schultz.
Are the Titans willing to give up a second round pick for a ascending player? I know the stats doesn't look like he's an ascending player, but they phased him out of that offense very quickly. When he was used and used properly, he was one of the up and coming young tight ends in the National Football League. And you just don't take that step back that far without there being other factors involved. And I just think they started to phase him out once Arthur left. They started to phase him out last season. So I think that would be something that the Titans should explore. Because, listen, frankly, over the last three seasons, Chigakonkwo, he's averaged about 470-something yards, about maybe 40 receptions and two or three touchdowns. I'm not sure if that's enough for this, you know, for a young quarterback. I think they need someone more dynamic and more explosive. I love Chig, but I think I'm not sure if Chig is a dynamic starter. I think he can. He's a starter in this league. He can play, but I don't think he moves the needle much when teams are game planning. Yes, they pay attention to him, but if you have a Kyle Pitts there, now he becomes the number one option. Now defenses got to, because with Kyle Pitts, he's big enough to put him in a slot, strong enough to put him outside to overmatch some of these DBs. So he's sort of that tight end that everybody's looking for, that can flex from putting his hands in the dirt and then also being out wide by himself.
Listed at 6'6", 246 pounds.
Excellent red zone. He would be a red zone nightmare if they used him the right way.
Willie, your thoughts on Kyle Pitts?
You know, I hear D-Mace talking about it, and I'm like everybody else. When you watch Kyle Pitts, going back to his days at Florida, mm-hmm. you're just drooling over the
exactly.
talent. You're like,
yeah.
My goodness, look at this guy. He's the perfect prototypical tight end who can move, he can catch. And then you look at the production. Like D-Mace just said, should be a great red zone option target. He's got 10 touchdowns in 4 years. And I think there's probably some fantasy owner of Kyle Pitts shaking his head in his car right now, driving along going, yeah, Kyle Pitts, I fell for it too. You know, like and some of this was under Arthur Smith, mm-hmm. right? That first year, he did meet expectations. He had 1,000 yards. He averaged 15 yards a catch, which is really good for a tight end. He made the Pro Bowl. And then the next 2 years, you're like, what happened? Well, part of it is injuries.
Mm-hmm.
And then last year under the new coach, new regime, and also let's remember who was throwing him the ball for a couple of those years, right?
Yes.
It wasn't Steve Bartkowski or anything, you know, not that Steve Bartkowski's a Hall of Famer, but give me your best Falcons quarterbacks through the years.
Here were his quarterbacks. Kyle Pitts' quarterbacks since arriving in Atlanta. He had Matt Ryan in Matt Ryan's final season mm-hmm. with the Falcons. He had the combination of, wait for it, guys, Marcus Mariota and Desmond Ridder in 2022.
Right.
If you think that's bad, wait till you hear about 2023 when he had Desmond Ridder and Taylor Heineke.
Yeah.
And then last year, Kirk Cousins and Michael Penix Jr. And as one texter points out, and the texter is correct, I will never understand how all of these Titans fans want to keep getting people that are hurt or have injury problems. They never work out. They're already hurt. If he has injury problems, we do not need Kyle Pitts. And yes, Kyle Pitts does have an injury history. Dustin in Hopkinsville says, I'm over Chig, but it might be Callahan. All players seem to regress under Callahan, but get a good proven tight end and build our rookie behind him. Another texter said, give Chig some grace. He had to turn into a blocking tight end for Henry and then had to deal with Will Levis. I agree on the injury part. Titans mm-hmm. fans, they've been burned by that before. The thing about Kyle Pitts versus Jonnu Smith, because yes. there were reports last week that Jonnu Smith might be on the move, and I'm sure Titans fans, some Titans fans at least, would love to have Jonnu Smith back in the fold. But Jonnu Smith is a quote-unquote older player at this mm-hmm. point. Kyle Pitts, again, he'll be 20.
Okay.
25. He's played four full seasons.
Exactly. That's why
And he hasn't turned 25 yet. And he's only had 1 year where he's missed games.
Exactly. So, he's not injury prone. What are people talking about?
Yeah, he has, you know, he's had some injuries. But I think if you play 4 years in the league, you're going to have some injuries. Like, nobody's shielded.
Yes, as Caleb said, he's only not played 17 games once. Is that considered an injury
exactly.
problem?
That's a fair retort, Caleb.
Yes. And so this is what I would say, though. There's no way I'm giving up a second-round pick. Forget that.
Because you got to pay him, too.
He does not have a contract for next season.
If he hits the market, then I'm in. But I'm not going to pay him big and give a second-round pick because I'm not going to fall for the tantalizing talent. The fact is, he just has not produced for three straight years. He's not productive enough for me to have to give up a second-round pick. But I'm very intrigued about the whole thing if he gets on the street.
But do you think that was more so? I think it was more so the product of his environment. Because when you go through three or four quarterbacks, and you're talking about three or four quarterbacks.
And not good ones.
Exactly. We're not going through three top-end quarterbacks. No, we're going through three bottom-end quarterbacks. And the production you saw just gradually decrease in those situations. And when he did have a sort of stable guy last season, at one point it seems like they were getting back on track somewhat. But then again, he had to deal with going from one quarterback to another. So I think the talent is there. I don't think he's a injury risk. But what I would be concerned with is what is his mentality moving forward, you know, because sometimes you can get in situations like this and it messes you up from a mentality standpoint. So where are you at as a player? If we go out and make this trade, because you're going to have, I'm with you, Willie. I would try not to give up a second round, third round. Yes. But if you're going to give up that much, you got to make sure the guy you're getting, you know, the physical talent is there. But I need guys that mentally is going to be there as well.
Yeah, to me, it's, as I was saying, that he's a younger player. He can grow with Cam Ward. They can grow together versus someone like Jonnu Smith, for example, who may only be here for a year or two if that were a trade that the Titans would make with the Miami Dolphins. So I heard the report about Kyle Pitts over the weekend. I saw the report from Jordan Schultz. I heard the report from Jeremy Fowler. And I thought it was interesting because the tight end position has been a non-factor offensively for the Tennessee Titans in recent years. And then, Willie, as you described, you know, if you're building a tight end from the ground up, if you're building a model tight end, that tight end will probably have the measurements of Kyle Pitts. He's 6'6", he's 250 pounds, he's dynamic when the ball's in his hands. So I'm intrigued by the idea. I'm not sure how realistic it is, however.
I'm not sure how realistic it is. And I'm curious in this game of poker, if the Falcons are saying, you know what, we're going in a different direction, we might be able to really get something for this guy. And everybody else around the league is going, you know, they're not going to keep him. If I wait this out, he could get cut, et cetera, or the price is going to drop. I think that's the game we're playing right now, because I can't help but look. We just talked about the circumstances. I get it. But he had 1,000 yards at age 21 as a rookie. And since then, he's had 1,300.
Since then, he has 1,625 receiving yards over three seasons, which is an average of 628 per 17 games.
356, 667, 602 are his yards the last 3 years. So that's three straight years. That's a lot of years in football age, right? And you're just wondering, what the heck? And I know a lot of it can be explained, but the fact is he's got to be considered a little bit of a gamble with a lot of a high, high ceiling, right, if you can catch it right. But I would hate to go to the mat and get him. We saw what happened with Legarius Sneed, right? They gave him a third-round pick for a guy who's a little bit older, and you see how bad that's burning them right now. You would hate to, again, give up assets, pay big for Pitts, because now you're really in trouble if you do that. So I'm going to try to hold my second-round pick and hope that the price drops or somehow he ends up on the street.
I don't think you can, you know, I know you brought up the Legarius Sneed, but you can't allow that to scare you away from potentially signing a guy that can really change your offense, because I think that's what type of player he is. But there are, you know, there are some concerns, because I think the one concern is that you have to pay him. You know, you're giving up this second round or third round pick, and then you have to pay him. And then you got to honor majority of that contract depending on how you pay it. I would have rather got him if he still was under, you know, at two more years left on the deal, maybe three. And so now I'm still working on the previous contract, whether signing him to a bigger contract. It's almost like you come here, you prove it to me, and then I'll sign you. You know, it may take you 2 years, but in this situation, it would be giving up a second round pick or a third round pick. And then if it doesn't work out, he's gone. You know, you don't even have a chance to bring him back. Well, you do, but if it doesn't work out the first year, you're not going to bring him back and sign him to a big contract.
615-737-1025. There are reports out there about Kyle Pitts and his availability. Would you be interested in the Titans taking a run at Kyle Pitts? 615-737-1025. But coming up next, last week we heard from Will Levis. He broke his silence about the situation he finds himself in. Is the Titans' handling of Will Levis a sign of a dysfunctional franchise? Because one prominent NFL analyst did wonder that over the weekend, and we'll discuss that coming up next. 615-737-1025. The PFL World Championship semifinals are Thursday, June 12th at Municipal Auditorium, and you can be there. Text in the keyword MATCH, M-A-T-C-H, to 615-737-1025 now to be entered to win a pair of VIP ringside tickets. Visit pflmma.com/schedule for more details.